Well, welcome aboard, folks. Dr. Charles Parker here one more time. And we're at Core Brain Journal, and we have Cindy Goldrich here with us. She's from the beautiful state of New York. And Cindy is a coach. She's going to tell us about some aspects of coaching ADHD parents and teachers that we really haven't heard about before. We've heard about coaching, but we haven't heard about what she's going to tell us about. Thanks so much for joining us, Cindy. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
So I'm going to do a brief bio. Cindy has written a book, and she's going to do a book giveaway, folks. It's called 8 Keys to Parenting Children with ADHD, and the book giveaway from the time of publish of this podcast will be available for 2 weeks, and then we're going to close it. So if you have any thought, hey, I'd like to read this book, I'd like to take this further down the road, jump on and sign up for that download, that giveaway. So Cindy Goldrich is from Roslyn Heights, New York, is an ADHD parent coach, and the transformational moment is a teacher trainer as well. We'll talk more about that in a moment. Her mission is to create a calm, more compliant environment, establish realistic rules wherever they are, and have some more clear expectations to reduce homework stress and improve problem solving, as well as self-advocacy skills. Wow, that's a mouthful. She provides education and support so kids can thrive, not just, doggone it, survive. So, Cindy, with that little brief introduction, tell us a little bit about your experience, where you are right now. What are you doing? What's your practice like? What's happening for you?
Absolutely. Well, my practice really has two equal parts. I support the parents of the kids who have ADHD because I really feel that parents parent out of love and logic. But when you have a complex child, you don't always know how to really work with them. So I'm there to give the support and the education and the understanding to help the parents. And then the other thing I do and have done for so many years now is I found that after I've worked with the parents so much, they were able to advocate for their kids and help the teachers understand a little bit, but they found that the teachers didn't really know what the teachers didn't know, that it's not part of teacher education to know about ADHD and certainly not about executive function. So I now go into school districts and conferences all across the country, and I do, you know, teacher education. So it's really a great balance because I have that whole circle of support between the parent and the educator.
Sounds terrific. Let me tell you, listeners, as a practitioner in the state of Virginia, I can tell you that what's going on with Cindy right now, and one of the reasons I really wanted her to talk to us, is because this is surprisingly controversial. As amazing as it is that it's controversial, I can tell you it's controversial in the state of Virginia because there are written state rules about teachers not handling kids in certain ways. And I'm looking forward to see if Cindy has had some of those experiences with individuals who are, you know, in some ways resistant to evolving that conversation in the school system. I mean, it's pretty transparent that parents would have some very successful, helpful experiences working with a coach. That's given. And then how you do that, that's going to be interesting, of course, if you want to talk a little bit about that. But I think that next thing is, how do you jump into controversy with individuals who are relatively innocent? Some of the teachers have ADHD themselves and have not been identified. So then how do you jump into that? How do you handle that interesting transformational moment with those teachers?
I love that question. And yes, you know, it's interesting. When you say it's controversial, it's not just that it's controversial sometimes, it's that teachers who have been in their profession for so long are really operating out of the love and logic that the parents are, and they just don't know any better. So in comes someone like me from the outside saying, hey, you know what, guys, I know how you can really work with these kids. And sometimes I do get the resistance, but sometimes I have such an open arm, you know, welcoming me. But what I find is that in making some of the suggestions, the teachers are sometimes so interested and wanting to make these changes, but then they get so concerned that their administrators may not, you know, fund that, or that their administrators may not give them the time. For instance, I'll give you some specific examples. One of the things I talk about a lot is the impact of stress. And I know you know that, right? The impact of stress on learning. So I make some concrete, specific suggestions on how we can reduce the stress in the classroom, not just for the kids with ADHD, but for all the kids. And some of them get up and do a 5-minute yoga or a mindfulness or even a meditation. And the teachers are so interested once they hear the science behind it, and I can tell you some of that, but what they get concerned about is, but if I start doing this and my administrators walk by, they're going to wonder, well, why aren't I spending my time teaching the curriculum? So it really has to be this full systemic change that we're calling for, which is helping the school districts themselves, the administrators and the teachers understand that we've got to bring back social emotional learning into the classroom. We have to really address the whole child and what's going on. The kids with ADHD especially, but really for all of the kids.
So you're talking about system change from the superintendent down. You have to go in and get that superintendent in your back pocket and drop his name or her name a few times when you walk in the room, and then everybody can breathe a sigh of relief and actually listen. Yeah, I mean, that is what's going on because it's an administrative challenge. And honestly, I'm not that familiar with it. I just know I have some teachers who are patients, and I know they wish they could do more. And sometimes it's very difficult. So then getting the administration on course is one thing. Now, you broke up a little bit when you were talking about some of the things that you help the teachers learn to do with the students. Could you give us some more examples about that, please?
Sure. One of the most important things I want the teachers to do is help the kids learn about their brain. Help the kids understand that not everyone learns the same and that some kids may do better if they move around, if what we call fidgeting, right? But sometimes, and you know this, sometimes fidgeting is with your whole body. Sometimes it's standing up, changing your seat, moving anywhere you want to move. So I want the teachers not to just move the child, but to talk to the child. I notice that where you sit seems to impact how you learn. Do you want to maybe try to move your seat? How do you feel over here? What are some other things you can do to learn? So those are some of the specific things I really try to engage with the teachers.
So it must be a transformational process for teachers who are experienced with applying a certain measure of structure. And so often we hear with ADD that a structure is absolutely necessary, and people get so fixated on exactly what that structure is going to be as opposed to looking at the process. And I don't know, then how do you actually transform individuals from those who are sort of in this heavy-duty structure situation over to, hey, let's soften the blow a bit. Let's think about the child's mind, the child's brain, and how we can work with it in a flow mechanism. You're talking more about flow there than dogma and rote and so on and so forth.
Absolutely. Well, I will tell you that, you know, it's interesting, the timing of this. The article that I just wrote for my newsletter is How Do You Address the Teachers Who Seem to Not Understand? Because there is a lot of this expectation that, yes, ADHD, you've got to be very structured. But it is within that flexibility that the kid is going to learn to grow. But it has, in other words, it needs to be structured, but it needs to be structured for that child. Because for that child, it's going to be different than for another child. You know, the philosophy I work under and the introduction of my book is parent the child you have, not the child you thought you'd have, not the child you wish you'd have, not the child that you know you would have if your mother-in-law got her way. But it's the same thing with the teacher. The teacher has to teach each child differently, and just because they both have ADHD does not mean that the same answer will apply for each one. So that's why you have to help the kid know what makes sense for them so they can start to help the teacher.
So then let me ask you this question. As a trainer myself, I'm already thinking about how to put this into training sessions. Do you have like two or three, four or five modes that you say this child is this way and this would be a, or do you really work very hard to do absolute individualized, or do you have some patterns that are able to be discussed at this moment?
I would say that there are definitely patterns, but within each of those patterns, we can't know the pattern unless we include the child.
Understood.
So for instance, one thing we know is that some kids really need to fidget. So we want to help them learn different ways to fidget. So fidgeting may be the category, but we're going to individualize it.
I got you.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then what are these, when
that's
you do a presentation like this, excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but when you do a presentation like this, Cindy, what is your, is it an all day thing? Is it a morning? What kind of, what's the structure of your presentation?
The ideal is when I get to do a full day presentation. By full day, I mean, if it's a school day, I'll do it for, you know, literally the whole day. Sometimes if it's at a conference, it could be even a little longer, but I make it very interactive because I want the teacher to feel like the child in the classroom. So I literally have them doing some of the breaks I suggest, some of the activities that I suggest. I really engage them. Work locally, you know, even if a school will just give me an hour, I know I can make a difference, but usually what ends up happening is that whets their appetite and they say, okay, now I get it. Now you got to come back and give us the full thing, because there's so much that can be done. But I can tell you this, if I go in and I've done this, if I can be in a school for one full day, and then even if I just go back a few times and sit with groups of teachers and maybe observe some of the kids and then brainstorm with the teachers on the side, saying, hey, you notice what Johnny's doing, and let's see what we could do about Johnny, then these teachers are then empowered to take those skills into their own classrooms, and they're ready to fly. So it doesn't take so much, but that's one of the biggest problems in education is the funding. You know, I've had so many teachers say, ah, we want to bring you in, but the school says we don't have money for, you know, outside professional development. But when they find it, they realize that the amount of reduction in the off-task behavior of the kids, the amount of productivity they're able to increase, it makes it all well worth.
So I'm interested in that article that you wrote. Why don't you make sure you send it to me so I can put it in the show notes, because it'll be a couple weeks before this conversation winds up being published. And but if you do, you have a reference for what it is, and for those who are listening now who may want to go back and check it out, the article.
Absolutely. It will be on my blog, on my website. My website is ptscoaching.com. Now, PTS stands for Pathways to Success, because I believe these kids all have their own unique pathway. But Charlie, I have realized that we could also have called this post-traumatic school, PTS, post-traumatic school,
right.
Because unfortunately that's what a lot of kids really suffer from.
Yeah.
So if they go to my website, PTS Coaching.
I got you, and I have that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll put that in the link. Now, what's the, and the title of the article was catchy. You told me offline before we started. What was the title of that article?
How do you address the teachers who do not seem to understand?
Okay, good. Yeah. So that'll be great. We'll drive that over and get some people driving over to PTS Coaching, and we'll have that in the show notes. So let me ask you this. One of the things I've found that's so interesting, what's such a pleasure for me, having a chance to talk to people like you, you're experienced, you've been out on the road, you've had numerous experiences with parents, so you're not just fresh out of the box. You've been out there on the road of life. And I think the thing that's important for our audience is if you could share with us a transformational moment or two that you were going down the path, you were having a great time, and this person, this individual, this parent, this teacher came up, and you had to rethink what you were doing. Does anything like that come to mind off the bat here?
Yeah, I would say this. You know, my background is as a mental health professional. But then I have ADHD throughout my family, as many families do. And so I started learning about this. And what I found was that once I understood more, I assumed other people did. And, you know, all the teachers, you know, that were working with all the schools understood. But then when I found out that they did not really know some of the basics, just some of the things such as the value of fidgeting, as we've been talking about, or that some of the kids may have the slower processing speed and just aren't keeping up, or that their sense of time, I don't know, you know, I'm sure you know this, that the internal clock that people have is not always accurate.
Yeah.
So it's not always the same for all individuals. So when I realized how much these little things impact learning and behavior, it blew me away, and it made me so passionate about, I just want every parent and every educator to just understand my full day of workshop, my full, you know, this is what you got to know if you're going to work with these kids.
Mm-hmm. So give me an example of a personal where you hit a brick wall, where you were going along as the younger person, not the experienced mm-hmm. road warrior person you are, but back where you were in a relative state of innocence and came to this transformational moment of, okay, this is what I have to do. I was going at it. I'll tell you a quick story about myself, and it may kindle something for you. I mean, as I was going along in my life, I was doing a tremendous amount of additional training in psychopharmacology. I mean, we've been out on the road. When you're speaking on the road, what happens is the pharmaceutical companies send you someplace, if you're going to work with them, every year, mm-hmm. to get the best and brightest people in the country, which in this country is the world, and they're going to teach you how to understand psychopharmacology even better. So what happens, I'm going in, I think I know what I'm doing, and I have the best trainers. I have good conceptualization. I know what the cytochrome P450 pathways are for the meds. I understand drug interactions, the whole thing. And yet I get out there and I realize, hey, this person wants to work with me. I want to work with that person. And I, my friends, am shooting blanks. This is not working. And I've not shot one blank. I've tried all these different tricks in my pocket to get these meds to work correctly. And that's when I then had to say, okay, I've got to do something else, because there's a measure of responsibility that I have here. Mm-hmm. This person wants something from me, and I am definitely not providing it. So then I've got to, it doesn't matter how hard I'm trying, that's not the issue. The issue is that person isn't making any progress. And they're in my office, and that's a responsibility for me. So then I had to, that's why I've gotten further and further into the box, and so I say this often, I guess so far in the box, I look like I'm out of the box, because I had to find some answers, you know, because things right. weren't working. So tell us, you have anything happen like that to you?
Absolutely. I was, you know, when I first started out wanting to help in the world of ADHD, I was coaching high school kids and college kids. And I'll never forget, I was coaching this one boy, Henry. And Henry was a very bright kid. He was a good kid. His parents called me and they said, listen, Henry's in 10th grade. He's very bright. He was doing very well in school, but now he's hit the wall. And could you come in and work with him? You know, his grades are going down. He's not getting his homework done. We keep trying to, you know, give him the incentive. And we've even tried taking everything away and nothing's working. And I thought, okay, you know, let's see what's going on. So the first thing I always do when I work with the kid is I want to know what makes them tick. What's their passion? Well, Henry's passion was he wanted to be a rap star manager. And he really did. I mean, he knew who the managers were, the different rap star, you know, performers, and he was very committed to that. And not only was he committed to that, but he had thought about the different ways he could do it. Well, the problem he was having was that his parents were not into rap music. His parents were both professionals. I think dad was a lawyer, and dad's dad was a lawyer. And they, you know, felt that, you know, yeah. you've got to study at school, and you've got to go to a good school, and yada, yada, yada. And long story short, what I found was I could work with Henry as much as I wanted to, but I had figured out why Henry wasn't doing well in school. He wasn't doing well in school because he didn't want to have to go to college. And he didn't want to have to become a lawyer. He wanted to do what he wanted to do. So it didn't matter how much I worked with Henry, I had to work with his parents.
Yeah.
Because his parents had a wonderful opportunity. They could have really encouraged Henry about all the wonderful things he could be learning in school that will help him for his future profession as a rap star manager. But instead, there was so much, it developed so much misunderstanding. And the methods that they were using, they thought were so loving and caring. And it wasn't that they weren't, but they were sabotaging everything with their child. So that was my transformational moment when I realized I need to work with parents.
Yeah.
That was it.
Absolutely understood. See, that's a great story because when you confront something like that, you actually change realities. You're in one reality with the student. And the reality, when it reaches your imagination and your consciousness, that the reality is completely different than you thought it was. And the reality is absolutely, it's an unreal reality that you weren't dealing with at all, and you had to figure out a way to deal with it. So tell us this, I'm curious now, how did you handle those parents? What happened in that situation?
Very good. What happened was, unfortunately, as is very often the case, not always, mom and dad were not on the same page.
Uh-huh.
I was able to work with mom, and she started to really understand, but dad still felt like, yeah, but you know what? We got to get him through the homework. It's just about that. So dad was still dangling that carrot and threatening that stick. So I wasn't as successful with dad initially, but mom started to really bond with her son.
Great. So then you broke the categorical moment a little bit because you had some support there, and then the dad could possibly see, because obviously it can't be categorically that he's going to be immediately a rap store manager either. He can't go somewhere in the middle was where you ultimately wound up, I would imagine, because the parents had to have a compromise.
Exactly. The parents needed, you know, I always say, don't let your relationship suffer at the altar of homework.
Mm-hmm.
If you're finding that you're fighting with your kid over the academics, they need you to be the parent. They need the school to help with certain things, but they need you, you know, because they're diving into the shark's tent, you know, the shark's pool all the time. They need to feel like it's safe to be with you. And if you're at opposite ends with them, that's where I need to start. I need to start with your relationship with your child. That's why my workshop, by the way, is called Calm and Connected. It's a workshop series I developed for parents. It all starts with calm, because without calm, there is no learning. And if there's no connection, warm, loving, caring connection between the parent and the child, that's the place I need to start with them as well.
So clarify that for me. So that is a parent workshop that you're talking about. I'm sure that's over on your website. And then what do you call the workshop that you do with the quote-unquote superintendents, the
with
teachers.
With them, so the parent workshop is called Calm and Connected, Parenting Children with ADHD and or Executive Function Challenges.
Yep.
That's a 7-session workshop that I do for the educators in the schools is understanding the impact of ADHD and executive function in the classroom. And by the way, most of the kids, you know, very often it'll be the special education teacher that will call me. But I really want to get to the mainstream.
Yeah.
Because most of these kids are mainstream classroom. They're not, you know, they may be getting services, but they're in the mainstream classroom. So it's not just enough for the special educator to know. It has to be that everyday teacher that knows.
Well, you know, Cindy, one of the things I see, and I'm sure this is kind of what you're talking about when you're talking about special ed versus, quote unquote, not special ed. I was going to say the average teacher, and I don't think there is an average teacher, but, you know, the people who are not special ed. One of the things I found in the population in general regarding executive function challenges is the whole diagnostic system is so based on appearances and so superficial. Uh-huh. That when you go into nuance, when you go into brain function, which is more nuanced, it's more subtle. How a person thinks is not on the radar. So thinking is not observable. So since it's not observable, then we don't have a problem. We have a problem if a person is hyper. We have a problem if you can see that person looking out the window. Anything else, there is no problem. I don't know what you're talking about. And it's the same thing with me when I, because I'm so interested in immune system dysregulation as it affects brain function. Now, you know, if you talk to a gastroenterologist in this town, you know, forget the fact that the chairman of the Department of Pediatric Gastroenterology at Harvard is into gluten sensitivity and brain function, okay? But if you talk to a GI guy in this town, say it's not real, it's all hokum, it doesn't make any difference. Now, this is the South, and it's a relatively small town in terms of it's not D.C. or New York City. But it's amazing to me that the reason they're that way is because of the nuance factor that I was just speaking about, because it's not visible, and if it's not visible, it's not real. And if it's not visible and it's not real, what in the heck are you talking about? I don't know if you've experienced that.
Absolutely. Because, you know, they see a kid who is very bright, who is able to perform one day, and when he's not performing the next day, well, he must just be lazy. He must not care. Because I don't see anything different. His testing is fine. He's getting all A's. He must just not want to do his work today.
Yeah.
They don't understand everything else is really impacting that child in that moment.
Yeah, that's so true.
Because as you said, it's not as visible.
It's just not visible.
Yeah, that's
true. We're actually more and more, the further we get into brain science, we're treating the invisible. And that makes it more hocus pocus, because the people don't know how to ask the questions about the invisible. You know, it's like way too complicated to think about thinking. I'm not going to think about thinking because that's way too complicated. Somehow that's like, you know, whatever. And they don't have a structure for it. So one of the reasons they don't have a structure is they don't understand thinking. And this is why I so frequently say the standard in the country is treating thinking without thinking about thinking.
Now that's a mouthful.
That is so true. I mean, it's a twister, but when you think about it, that's what's going on. So, well, listen, we're winding up here, Cindy. Thank you so much for taking the time. Let's take a moment to wrap with you a little bit. Cindy Goldrich, and right up there in New York, where are you, near the city? Are you up on Long Island? Where is Roslyn Heights?
On Long Island. Yeah, I'm on Long Island. But I do, just so everyone does know, my parent workshops, I do as a live interactive webinar. So people can, you know, I've got people from all over the country that do participate in my workshops.
Good for you.
And I travel all over the country.
You're a techie girl now. What software do you use for your webinars?
I use Zoom.
You use Zoom.
Are you familiar with Zoom?
Oh, yeah, I know Zoom. We do a lot of client consults with Zoom. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to be doing, I'm going to be doing a Facebook Live presentation this Friday. I mean, this will come out after we do it, but the group that I'm working with they're going to do the slides and the whole thing at Facebook Live. It's going to be fun. We'll see what happens. So we're going to promote it and see what happens with it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'll have to learn how you did it so I can do one, because that's next up on my list.
Thank goodness I got guy that I can work with. He's like, oh, no problem. I'm like, well, you know, if I can just do the presentation, I'm going to be in great shape. But I have no idea about all the rest of that stuff. Well, anyway, thank you very much. In closing, Cindy, tell us, we know about your website and, you know, that ptscoaching.com. Anything else you want to close as you're thinking kind of to embrace this moment, to wrap what you're talking about and send folks down the road with a mission?
Absolutely. My mission is this: parent the child you have, teach the kid you have. Please be in touch with me. My book is all about that, right? The 8 Keys to Parenting Kids with ADHD. If you want to join me for a workshop, even if you just want to join for the first session of my Common Connected workshop, so you get a good foundation and understanding, because it is all about the education. It's all about understanding these kids and what's impacting them beyond just the hyperactivity, the impulsivity, the inattentiveness that we think about on the surface for the ADHD.
Cindy, you are so right, because if a person just keeps doing what they're doing and expecting a different result, you know, we've heard that a few times, it just is not going to go anywhere. So it's a transformational moment to rethink the entire situation. If you're having a problem, you're in pain, the child's in pain, there's some ways that you can get out of it. And Cindy, thank you so much for sharing some of that material and doing the webinars and doing the presentations that you do. It's very helpful. We really appreciate it. And thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, girl. You have a good one.